Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Former presidential contender Mitt Romney, now seeking a Republican Senate bid in Utah. He was on MSNBC the other day, and he told Cassie Hunt that he thinks the Rush investigation is appropriate and should continue.
I think it's a totally appropriate evaluation by our government. Rush is clearly trying to become involved in the electoral process here and distort that process. We need to find out how and where, punish the people who have potentially been involved in that kind of disruption. And I'd like to see the Mueller investigation completed, take it to its conclusion. I doubt you're going to see something which implicates the president. I think that's very unlikely based on kind of the soundings that have been heard so far. But I do think we need to understand where Russia has been trying to play and to make sure they can't do so in the future.
That's Mitt Romney. Joining me now on the phone is Robert Bruno, professor and director of the labor education program at the University of Illinois. Bob, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me, Rick. It's always a pleasure.
We talked about this last week on the show about the Janus v. AFSCME decision with the U.S. Supreme Court. But I wanted to talk to you because, you know, now we've had a chance to kind of digest the ruling a bit. And while it's certainly wasn't unexpected, I guess the bottom line I'm wondering is where and Pat Brady and I even talked about, you know, what is the future for public employees unions and the labor movement and Democrats as a result of this?
Yeah, well, there's a...
Don't mean to give you too much to...
Yeah, lots to unpack there. I think, I mean, this was really a blow. This is a serious attack on the ability of public sector workers, and then frankly, workers in the private sector also, that they a threat to their ability to collectively act on their interest, to act as something other than just isolated individuals, so that they can properly protect the work they do, protect the public that they serve. So this is a serious challenge, and I think it will lead to some reduction in the percentage of public sector workers who are unionized. So it's make no bones about it. It's a serious assault. But the public sector unions really have been prepping for this for some time because they expected this to happen a year before when there was a previous case before the Supreme Court. And there had been a series of other Supreme Court cases that had been decided by a similar majority, and they had been really nibbling away at public sector unions and the ability of workers in the public sector to negotiate contracts. So these unions, the teachers, AFSCME, really have, SEIU, have been planning and prepping for this. And they've been talking to the members. They've been out in the local. They have been taking a deep dive into that relationship with their members. And that should be very helpful in sustaining a certain level of membership and for maintaining a strong degree of solidarity. I think there are, you know, there's still lots of influence, quite frankly, that they have on the political process. There's still important players around a whole set of employment-related and labor-related issues, and I expect that they're going to, you know, continue to be active there, and there might actually be some modifications to state collective bargaining laws that would be helpful. So, you know, this is a threat. There's just no way around it. This is harmful, but I think it may build a stronger activist base that will enable it to remain both important to workers in the workplace, to the public, who are recipients of public services, and also these folks will remain quite politically aware and conscious and active may turn out to vote in higher numbers, may volunteer more time, may make more voluntary contributions to political action committees. Because, quite frankly, these unions now, in a way that they've never had to confront in the past, and the workers, quite frankly, now understand what's at risk and the value of having a collective bargaining unit. So we may see a level of activism unlike what we've actually seen in the past.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I was wondering is, and we touched on this with Pat Brady, the former state Republican chairman, afterwards, is, you know, I see in talking to people, at least in this very short term, as you mentioned, you know, now union members see what's at stake, and that, if anything, there may be a mobilizing effect there that would help Democrats versus, you know, I'm not so sure that on the conservative checklist that that decision is something that necessarily helps Bruce Rauner or Republicans.
No. Actually, you know, I think that this, what this is going to do is it's really going to heighten and make just very evident the importance of having political leaders who support a working class, middle class agenda. That it's clear that it's important to cast those votes in ways that really represent the best of the options. And if and where those candidates certainly are Republican candidates, they will garner labor support, I think, particularly in state and local levels. And where they are Democratic candidates, well, they will also be supported. But that vote around where do you stand on workplace issues, where do you stand on collective bargaining, because now it isn't just some sort of transactional process. This is about you know, bigger issues. It's about our ability to provide good services, to build healthy communities, to reduce income inequality, all of those issues. And so the candidates that best represent that, frankly, I think are going to get strongly supported. And you know, if a percentage of those union voters were sitting on the sidelines, if they weren't turning out to vote, now I think you're going to see them reached. And what we know from lots of research is that when labor is able to make contact with their members, when they're able to really communicate to the broader community, they turn out numbers and they vote in ways that are consistent with that labor endorsed candidate. So in the particular, in this case of Illinois, I think this decision and these and the public sector union's ability to kind of ramp up and prepare for this is only going to increase their footprint on elections in November, from the governor's race through you know, through the state races and down even into local levels. Now every vote is really going to count, and every vote is going to be clearly tied to some economic reality, and that will probably cut against some social issues and some more divisive cultural issues. It just kind of lays bare the kind of class issues that are at play. So, no, I don't think this really politically is going to help either Governor Rauner or Republican candidates who've been antagonistic to collective bargaining in the state.
We're speaking to Robert Bruno. He's a professor at the University of Illinois and director of the Labor Education Program. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. We're speaking with Robert Bruno, professor and director of the Labor Education Program at the University of Illinois. Bob, we've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome as always.
Yes, good morning, Rick. Professor, I would like for you to just make a distinction between public sector unions and the private sector unions. Just give you real quickly, remember when United Auto workers who just really negotiated these unaffordable wages out. As consumers, we were able to make a choice when the foreign cars start coming in the 80s. So I don't have a problem with private sector unions. They'll just get to a point where their product is unaffordable. in the public sector, in particular in Illinois, these unions negotiate with elected officials, and they come up with these unaffordable benefit wages. But here's the problem. As a taxpayer, you have no choice. You can't do like an automobile, so I'll go to another car. We are stuck with the taxes. I'm trying to have this discussion.
Okay, Ron, I'm going to have to hold you there. I'm going to have to hold you there. Okay. Bob?
Sure, yeah. So, I think there is a common misunderstanding about the way in which the bargaining process in the public sector has impacts on the need to generate revenue and how that compares in the private sector where you have this marketplace. And there certainly isn't enough time on the program to get into all of the distinctions, but let me make a couple of just quick points. In the public sector, the people who are working, people who are teachers, people who are working throughout government services, have a high percentage of these workers have college degrees, have master's degrees, and it's well above the percentage of workers in the private sector that have college degrees and master's degrees. So when you control for things like college education, and then you do comparison, what are people earning in the public sector, what are people earning in the private sector, what you find out is that people who work in the public sector actually have a wage penalty. They actually earn on average about, for teachers particularly, 10% less, 15% less, 18% less. Now, there's some trade-off in terms of having a decent benefit package. Higher percentage of public sector workers have a health care plan and have retirement. But it simply isn't true that folks in the public sector are earning wages that are above in the private sector when you control for education, when you control for experience. And even the question of collective bargaining raising expenses in the public sector, and therefore there's this greater pressure on taxes. Quite frankly, when you take a good solid look and you do a comparison of places where collective bargaining exists as opposed to states where there isn't collective bargaining, and you control for all the appropriate factors, you don't see lower spending necessarily, and the impact and the tax rate that people are paying in a particular state really is driven by any number of different factors and variables, and it isn't really appropriate to lay that at the feet of the bargaining process. In fact, you could make the case that your taxes that you're paying, that yes, they're supporting people who are earning a middle-class wage, but those people are protecting trillions of dollars worth of assets within the community. They're educating children, they're protecting your waterways, they're protecting your streets, they're protecting your parks. These are the assets of the citizens of the state. So you make that kind of comparison and analysis, and you don't walk away saying, well, bargaining has led to this increase over and above what we otherwise would have spent. And it's also the case that people need to understand that some of the benefits that workers achieve in the public sector are actually set by they're set by legislation. And yes, of course, then unions are able to incrementally improve on those. But the idea is, of course, is that you do want to attract really capable, committed people to the public sector because you're serving citizens. You're not serving consumers who are buying a toothpaste. And one final thing, I would challenge the notion that the workers who worked for Ford, Chrysler, and General Motors under UAW contracts were earning wages that were unreasonable or above what they were worth, and that was the reason why there was some serious retrenchment in the auto industry. Stories are far more complicated than simply blaming collective bargaining.
That's Robert Bruno, professor at the University of Illinois and director of the Labor Education Program. Bob, as always, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
That was fun, Rick. Thanks. Appreciate it.